What is up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 445, and our podcast is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that gives us a little kickback and keeps the podcast ongoing. With me, of course, is my co-host Ryan. What's going on?
Not much. Now, I got a question. Does my shirt look red or orange to you?
It's red.
Huh. Okay. It's orange, but color's a little off on the camera, I guess. So
yeah, that's that Canon. Canon's like Canon good colors. Canon's supposed to have good colors.
All right. That's all right. I'm good. I'm here. I'm back.
Yeah, it definitely looks red. Everybody in the chat, let Ryan know if his shirt looks red or orange. To me, on my screen, it looks red.
It's pretty red. Yeah, it looks red to me on my screen too. So
yeah. But yeah.
That's all right.
But yeah, what's going on? How's it getting warmer there?
Yeah, the air's on. I was down here a little earlier tonight and the air was running, and like I had to adjust some of our like venting so that I wouldn't freeze myself out in here. Because air's running now. I think we've had a couple days in the 90s already.
Nice.
But then we've had like, you know, rain and stuff lately. So
yeah, it's always when it's like you think the summer's coming and then you have that cold day and you're like,
ah. Yep.
You know,
for sure.
I had a friend in town this past weekend, and something really interesting happened to me. I got pooped on by a
that's not what I thought you were gonna say.
Yeah, I got pooped on by a seagull.
Cool.
Just, you know, but I was indirectly my friend's wife, she got it directly in the head.
Oh.
Like directly, like full on, and I got the splatter of the poop, but she got it directly in her head. Like it was gross. Bad.
And that doesn't just like easily wash out, I'm guessing. It's probably like pretty greasy and like
we were like down by the beach, and then we had to go up to like a coffee shop. She went in the bath and she was in the bathroom for a while, like legit just like washing her hair out because it was bad. But maybe that means that they're off good luck or something. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. But it was this, it's like the first, I think that's the first time that's ever happened to me.
Yeah, I've been pooped on by a bird before, but
yes, because it was so funny. So when we started walking down there, we were like talking about it because there's like a ton of birds down there, and then we walk like 10 minutes and boom, get pooped on. So yeah, that was my exciting weekend. So hopefully your weekend was a little bit better than that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it was good.
But yeah, we have a lot to talk about this week. I reviewed probably the smallest CPU cooler that I've ever taken a look at. There are some interesting hotspot issues with pretty much every NVIDIA RTX graphics card. So that's kind of not so great, but it makes sense why it's happening. Details on the Radeon RX 9060 XT. Pretty cool case that just came out. Some information on the PlayStation 6 Portable. Synology is doing some... I don't know if you want to call it shady business.
Shenanigans.
Intel possibly moving to a new socket, which is quite disappointing, and a bunch of other stuff that we're going to be talking about this week. So if you do want to follow along, we have our full show notes page right here on the super, super, super fast website now that actually works. since we moved to a new server, so everything's up and running, but we do have our full show notes page if you do want to go ahead and follow along. And of course, we're going to start with reviews. So I took a look at the Scythe Shuriken 3 CPU cooler. And this thing, as you can see, I mean, this thing is tiny. 37 millimeters
shorter tall. than your RAM and your like,
yeah,
you know.
And to be fair, this is not designed for a like what I tested it in, which is like a normal PC. This is designed for an incredibly small form factor system, and not even like a little bit larger form, like a really, really small form factor system. Think like Fractal Design Terra. That's kind of what this is designed for, where you really don't have a whole lot of space, but you want to get a cooler on there. That's kind of what this is designed for. And it can only handle TDPs up to 115 watts too. So at least effectively. So you can see just how small this is. Like the fan itself is only 16 millimeters thick. So very, very small, 92 millimeter fan on there. Just super, super small. Like you can see just how small it is. Now they do have a pretty dense heatsink stack that sits under it. And that heatsink stack does have four heat pipes. They're 6 millimeter thick heat pipes built in. And they've increased the plate right here or the base of the cooler to accommodate different CPUs and things like that. So like I said, it's just incredibly compact. Installing this is quite easy as well. We installed this in my new test system for CPUs, for CPU coolers, which is an AMD X870 system. So installation is quite easy. You first take the typical or the standard AMD mounting brackets off. You install the AMD mounting brackets that come with the cooler to the bottom of the cooler. They just screw in and you can't mess it up because they say AM4, AM5 on them. So if you put the wrong ones on, like I said, they're labeled. You apply your thermal paste, you put the cooler on top of the CPU and you sort of line up the holes in these brackets that you see right here with the holes in the actual, from the back plate of the AM5 mounting bracket. And then you use their included screws, which go through the back of the actual AM5 mounting brackets. And then that secures the cooler on top. Really easy. Shouldn't be hard at all. You connect your fan to power and you are good to go. So really easy to go ahead and get this installed. Now, like I said, this is not made really for high-end systems. I wouldn't recommend this to anything above a class 5 CPU, so like a Ryzen 5. And we tested on Ryzen 5, and it did keep the CPU under its TJ Max, but I mean, the results aren't anything amazing. At idle, you know, we can see that our temperatures are 58 degrees Celsius, and then at load, they're 90 degrees Celsius, which is quite hot. But again, this is kind of what you're going to get from this size of cooler, I would say. There are a ton of other coolers that are around the same size that at least in my research are around the same temperature wise. So it does keep it under the TJ Max. It's not necessarily cooling amazingly. And again, you can't expect much from a cooler that's super tiny. You know what I mean? I think there are other options that are larger. And I think that if you don't have certain clearance issues, there are ones that are slightly bigger that would give you better performance. Again, but not by like crazy amounts or anything like that. I think if you are like in a 10 liter, 13 liter case, and this is kind of your only option, this will do the job. It will keep your CPU under the TJ Max, but your temperatures are going to be higher than maybe what you would like, I would say. But yeah, like I said, I think this has a certain selection of people that are looking for this type of cooler. Like I said, for most people, if you're running a normal mid tower, this wouldn't be anything you would consider. But if you're running a, like I said, 10 to 13 liter small form factor system that might not be doing a whole lot, this would be a solid thing. And that fan is actually pretty quiet as well, especially during. So like I said, it's how much is this? It's $40. So it's not necessarily crazy expensive either. I gave it a 7 out of 10. Like I said, just passable performance. And the thermal paste did come in like a little packet rather than a syringe. I'm never a fan of that. But it is, like I said, it's one of the smallest coolers I've ever reviewed. Probably one of the smallest coolers that you can buy. The installation is easy. It does come with screws for a larger fan too. So if you did want to put a standard 25 millimeter fan on there, you can definitely do that. And that the included fan, which is a 16 millimeter fan, is pretty quiet as well. So I gave it a 7 out of 10.
You know? For $40, I think that's a pretty good deal, because a lot of times you'll like hit this point where you know you go larger and stuff gets expensive, and then there's the mid range where everything makes sense. And you would think sometimes going smaller you'd get a lower price because there's less materials. No, like a lot of times the price goes up because you go into like this niche of like really trying to cool stuff with smaller parts. So I think $40 is pretty fair for that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not bad, like I said. So check out the review if you are interested. Old man is in the chat. Good to see you here. And he said, I sent my Sapphire Pulse Radeon RX 97 XT back to Newegg. I was having black screens at startup with dual HDMI connectors. And he said one HDMI would work perfectly. It was only when two devices were connected at 4K, 444, 120 Hertz that I would have black screen errors. Ryan, you asked if that was the issue with the card.
There's just a known issue or common.
Yeah. And he said, as far as he can tell, yeah. It seems like with new graphics cards, we have a lot of issues these days.
I said, I had the black screen issue with my 5080, but it was user error.
Yeah, Ryan.
Which I was thankful for, right?
Because yeah.
You could be in a position where you've just spent, you know, $500 to $1,500 on a card, and then you get one that has issues that mm-hmm. aren't user related. And
you know, 5090s are going for $5,000 right now.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's a little ridiculous. So we're gonna move on to Case Mod Friday, and I really like this build. I don't know what you're gonna think of it, Ryan. So this is a Noctua themed wood PC. This one's from MXC Builds, who's done a handful of wooden themed builds. And what do you think? What do you think of this one, Ryan?
A lot of times I'm not a fan of the wood, or all wood builds, I should say, or mostly wood, because like wood doesn't do a good job of transferring heat. You know, some cases will actively dissipate heat just based on their metal chassis, right? And sometimes people will build these wood cases that just enclose everything and they get too hot. This I really like because they've obviously thought about thermals. They've got the glass in there that it just looks like a really high end, like display piece with the nice wood.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if
this clean was lighting
based on the Thermaltake tower case.
It looks very similar.
It doesn't mention that it is.
They might have taken some design inspiration from it.
Yeah, right? For sure. Oh man, this is so cool. I really, and like the wiring on the back with the individual sleeve cables, really, really like that.
And the channels, they're like, you know, channels for each cable in the wood. Yeah.
Looks awesome. Super, super cool right there. Like I said, you have the Asus Noctua graphics card, of course, Noctua air cooler. Even made a custom cover. I believe this is the power supply. Made a custom cover here. You have the Noctua fans, and I would assume the bottom, the side, and the top as well. You can see.
It's interesting that they put the power supply there when you've got that whole lower chassis. You could.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that is the power supply. But I could be wrong. But yeah, this is really, really cool. I guess this is open, so you can kind of see.
Yeah.
So pretty. Like I said, really, really cool. Build here. That's so cool. Yeah, I like this one.
Maybe you can run your cable. Go to the back of it again. Maybe that's where all your cabling comes out. Or no, it's got that brush plate up at the top, isn't it? Isn't that what that black section is? Is like brush plate so that your cables can just come out?
Huh. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, probably. Either way. Very cool.
Yeah, really, really cool. I really, really like this one. So shout out to MXC Builds for this, because it is, like I said, this just looks awesome. And like I said, wood, I feel like wood builds are like hit or miss. And this one's very much a hit in my opinion. Yep. So definitely go ahead and check that one out. We'll move on to news. And, you know, since the 12VH PWR power connection, we've had issues with overheating. We've had issues with connectors melting, cables melting, cards dying, cards catching fire, all these issues. And Igor's lab did a really interesting, they have a really interesting report on heat being generated on RTX 50 series GPUs. Lots of hotspots, lots and lots of hotspots. You can see this one is 107.3 degrees Celsius right here. But it's not just like you would think the high-end card, like the 5090, of course, it may have some issues. But they tested a 5070 and 5080, which also had these issues. You know, which, like I said, really brings to the question longevity, right? If you're running these and they're getting this hot, I don't know. What do you think about this?
Yeah, it stinks. I don't have a FLIR camera or thermal imaging camera, unfortunately. Otherwise, I'd check mine. The one thing that is nice, well, I say is nice, like there are some mitigation efforts you can take with this, right? And the main one is to essentially pull your back plate off or your heatsink off and put some thermal padding between the VRMs that are typically the hot spot on these that they're finding. Just so you've got some thermal connection between those and the back plate and your cooler. So that can really help reduce it. I saw, you know, up to like, I think 10 degrees.
I think one big part of this too is because we've made the PCB smaller.
So small, yep.
Right? So typically the PCB takes up half, sometimes less than half of the length of the card. And then all your components are just jammed in there. Whereas, like, I guess because you want that pass-through cooling,
right?
You that's why you cut the card. But are we making it worse by packing all those components and it's still getting hot? I don't know.
Maybe we should start thinking about moving down a slot or adjusting spacing on motherboards so that you can have fans on both sides.
Yeah,
you know, go like with a thinner heatsink fin stack on each side of the card and a set of fans on each side somehow.
Yeah, I mean, especially like a lot of like some higher end, I mean, these are just normal models, they're not like crazy models or anything, but on some of the higher end ones, you know, you have quite a lot of components really, really packed in there.
Yeah.
When it comes to the power delivery components and things like that. I just think that one, like just stacking everything together, but like I said, you just run into the same issue. Whereas if you extend this PCB, so here's where the PCB cuts off. If you extend this PCB, then there you can't get that pass through airflow to mitigate some of that heat that's being, you know, generated here. Then you're going to dissipate it over here.
Yeah, I don't know what the fix to this is, other than better cooling from the factory, right? Because a lot of these cards that are having this issue, I think, are using the reference design of the board. Mm-hmm. From what I saw. Like I said, I don't have a thermal imaging camera to see exactly what it is on my card under load. I'd be curious to see what mine is and, you know, see if it makes sense to just add some thermal pads.
Do you think you could, like, so here's where like the VRM is, right? You can see that's where the hotspot is on both of the images. Like it's, you know, right here.
Yeah.
Do you think that you could cut out this section, right? Like cut it, add it slightly over here, and then you would get some pass-through cooling that Maybe. Way. I would assume this stuff would have to be tested. Like we're just like spitballing ideas here, but like you would think that, but then again, you also, like if you have just a small little PCB here and a small little section, then you have to worry about like fragility of the card because
You could even design like your shroud that goes around like the sides, because a lot of times on the side of the card, I'm looking over at mine right now and the fin stack is like visible to the side. But if you built like a shroud around it that took some of that air and was able to push it around to the back side of the card.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of gap between the back plate and the PCB, but you could adjust that. I mean, you could make some changes.
Do you think we'll see a change made for maybe the next generation or not?
Not until we start seeing a ton of devices failing early, right? But we're not going to see that because the expectation here is that we might see shorter length lifespans of cards, but it may be, you know, going from you could get 10 years out of a card or 5 years out of a card down to just two. Some people are saying, you know, it's going to last until the last day of that warranty, and then these things are going to kick the bucket.
Yeah, that would suck.
You know, we're not, I don't think with these we're going to see any instant failures like you see with a melting power plug or anything like that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Ooh, street racing going on over
Bob's place. Somebody's in a motorcycle right outside. Like there's, yeah. I said, like there's a window right before, like right here, and they were like right down there. So, but yeah, it's just, it is quite interesting that this is on like a 5070, 5080,
yep.
Cards, and you know how, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just have to see, like, next generation if this gets moved. Because, again, we keep on going to that smaller. I mean, this one's a really small PCB. Look at all the extra, you know,
yeah,
area you have over here to kind of maybe space things out. But like I said, then you lose that other part of cooling. So it'll be interesting to see. Old Man asked, is that an example of 5090? No, I believe one of these is a 5070 and one's a 5080. So, yeah, like they're not 5090s. And yeah, I guess that's just that's just the thing, is that you stack all the components in one area. And obviously when you're gaming or doing anything else GPU intensive, those power delivery components are really going to heat up. And if they're all in one area, they're going to, you know, it's going to be a lot. It's just going to be hot. So. Yeah, I don't know a solution. I think if I knew the solution, we wouldn't have this problem, I feel.
Yeah.
So quite interesting. Check out the article over at Igor's Lab. We do have it linked if you want to check it out and read more about it. I mean, we're talking about it. Like, I don't think that it's not necessarily something to insanely worry about, especially if you're just like somebody who's gaming, you know, every once in a while. Like if you're not, you know, running the car 24/7 and that scenario, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But moving on from that to AMD, looks like they're moving up the launch date for the Radeon RX 9060 XT, which is kind of exciting. For those who are looking, again, something that might compete against the 5060, 5060 Ti, we have the Radeon RX 9060 XT launch date. Has been moved up to May 18th, which is literally right before Computex. They also postponed the RX 9070 GRE to late 2025. So I don't even know if that card is going to come out. Not really sure. For those who don't know, like I said, the 9060 XT will compete with the 5060 and 5060 Ti. Just like the 5060 Ti, we will see an 8 gig version and a 16 gig version. What do you think? Do you think AMD is going to price this pretty competitively? Like estimated pricing is $269 to $379. That's not bad.
Yeah, they've got to. You know, they did pretty well with their last release, right, on pricing. I think NVIDIA was a little more aggressive than we thought they were going to be with the 50 series pricing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the 5060s. So I think, you know, while AMD may not adjust to those prices, I think they have already planned to be aggressive anyhow, I would hope.
Yeah. Do you think that price will be that price?
No, that's a whole other thing. You know, what I'm hopeful for is they'll do what they did last time, right? Like you have to initially launch with X number of cards at that price, right, for X amount of time, or, you know, first wave, whatever it is, and then, you know, they can sell at different prices, kind of like they did with their previous.
I think if they launch. Do that, with
it at the least gives you a chance at getting a card at that price.
Yeah, and I think this, like we always talk about the higher end cards, and even the 9070 XT was not the highest end card, but
right.
This level of card is what a lot of people are going to buy. Right. So yeah, I would hope, you know, retailers have like 1,000 cards. Like we saw with Overclockers UK, who had like 1,000 9070 XTs. That means that on launch day, you should be able to get one. You should be able
still
to
pick. Not a lot, though, when you think of a global, like, I mean, I know that's correct. A German retailer, but still, like.
Correct. I mean, but you were like able to still buy one like day one. It wasn't like you like refresh the page and it was sold gone. Out. Yeah, like within an hour, they were sold out, but you could get one if you really wanted to get one. So hopefully with this, you'll be able to do the same. You'll be able to get one if you really wanted to get one. I think that's the big thing. So we'll see what happens with that. It's interesting. Like I said, the 9070 GRE, maybe they kind of reevaluated and said, hey, like maybe this SKU, we don't have a spot for this SKU either. Mm-hmm. Or they don't want the 9070 GRE to cut into the sales of a 9060 XT either, right? So maybe it comes later as sort of like, not a refresh, but sort of like a in-between that doesn't jeopardize the sales of the 9060 XT, I guess. So I guess we'll see if that actually happens. But yeah, excited to get more cards in people's hands. Like I said, I feel like just everybody's ready to upgrade. Like everybody's wanting to upgrade. They want that new graphics card. And it's so hard to find cards at MSRP. And
it does feel good once you get that upgrade. It's nice.
Yeah, once you get that upgrade, it just feels great. So
because you know you're like, all right, I'm set for like the next X amount of years, right?
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to CPUs, you know, at least on the AMD side, AMD has the AM5 socket, and previously they had AM4 socket, which lasted how many generations of CPUs? Like what, 4 or 5?
Yeah, we had the
1800X all the way to the what, 5000 series was the last.
I'm AM4 and
it lasted a handful of generations, which is good. So if you bought the first generation, like Ryan, you initially had an original Ryzen, right?
Yep.
And then what, 3-4 years later, you upgraded to the Ryzen 5000, which is sort of towards the end of the life cycle of AM4. Yep. You know, and AMD promised the same thing with AM5. And we've already had 2 generations of desktop processors on AM5 already. On the Intel side of things, it looks like their upcoming Nova Lake processors will launch with a new socket. So that means that the previous socket is only one generation.
Yeah.
Now, just like everything that's happened with Intel, right? All over the past 2 years and their decline and not like, why do they just keep on doing dumb things?
I know. Like it seems like a no brainer to just leave it alone.
And then maybe it has something to do with, you know, the technology as far as like, okay, we need to add more pins for certain power.
It's going to be like due to some AI addition
or something, right?
You know what I mean?
No, but like AMD is able to still bring out new processors that are, you know, at the same time as keeping the same socket. So, you know, if anything, if this is a new socket, right? This LGA 1954, then the next one after it should not be a new socket. The next one after it should also not be a new socket.
Right.
Right.
I don't design CPUs, right? Or sockets. But yes, to me, it's like, all right, overbuild the thing, thinking 5 generations ahead. And if you don't use all those pins, you know, and like I said, take this with a grain of salt because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Like, design it so that, current gen only needs 90% of what we've got available on this socket. Next generation takes advantage of the next 2%, so on and so forth, till you like, you know, build some future proofing into it. I don't know if it's possible.
It's just like, it's really upsetting because, you know, maybe it's both things. Like I said, maybe 2 generations later, you want to upgrade your CPU. Now I have to buy an all new motherboard when I'm like, my motherboard's fine. It has all the features that I want. Or some new crazy feature comes along. Maybe it's like faster SSD speeds or better Wi-Fi or something, and you're just like, oh yeah, like I can just buy a new board and just pop in my processor. I don't have to buy both. You know what I mean? Old man says, wasn't it a new socket? It wasn't always a new socket. Lately, it's kind of been that way, but it hasn't always been. It's at least been like a generation and then a refresh, right? Or that was at least, this is one generation of parts and that's it. So that's the thing. And like I said, thinking about what's happened to Intel and their, how gamers and enthusiasts perceive them currently, this is a bad move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But this is not confirmed. This is only a rumor, but I mean, it seems like it's pretty going to happen. So
it wouldn't surprise me by any means.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And like I said, maybe this is that like that future-proof socket that you were just alluding to that we'll have for 2, 3, 4 generations of parts. Oh. But if it's not, and then we get a, I don't know, LGA, what would it be? 1986. Right? Yeah. Then like, you know. Then we got a new one again, and they're just not learning from their mistakes. So we'll see what happens with the socket. But yeah, I would really like to see something like, again, like AM4, AM5, where you have multiple generations on the same socket. It just, yeah, for people who want to upgrade, there's people who upgrade every generation. Sadly, there is.
Yeah.
So they don't have to go ahead and buy another motherboard or vice versa. So, moving on from that to cases, a pretty cool looking case from GameMax was announced. This is their Blade Concept ATX gaming chassis.
This is like Call of Duty and Monster all in one.
That's what it is.
It's like, it's what it reminds Monster. Me of. Makes
yeah, kind of like Monster. The green color and then the
lines. And, like, yeah, lines, I don't know. Yeah.
So it's a pretty interesting chassis. So as we look at it here, it's sort of like an open air kind of chassis with vertical GPU mounts and everything like that. It actually does look quite functional. That's the thing that I always look for. It looks quite functional here. And if we look at it from the side, I don't know why they have this cover here. I guess it's just to, right. Like, maybe your drives go in there. Because your power supply is on the other... Power supply's on the. I thought it was power supply initially, but your power supply's on the other side.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
But I do like this. I do like. There's so many open air chassis, and this one's just very like. Some of them are just real crazy. This one's kind of nice, and if this all lights up, like, you know, this is a render, but if this all lights up nicely,
yeah, that'd be very cool.
Yeah, and you have open air, so like, cooling's not really going to be an issue or anything in this. And again, if we look at the backside. Again, it does support like 360 AIO or just cooling fans up top. And I believe your power supply goes right here in the back.
Yep. And then that's like a cover for the cabling, it looks like.
Yeah. So keep everything clean in the back. I like this. I like this a lot. Is there pricing on this thing?
Yeah, potential.
$240. Not horrible.
Huh. Yeah,
not bad. I like it. I wouldn't mind doing a build in this. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, you could see these being the PCs for like a tournament, or like like a LAN center, because they look really cool. They're open air, like, which actually is really good for a LAN center to have open air systems and things like that. This will work out quite nice. So yeah, I like this. So like I said, check that out if you're interested.
Well, and even like their text looked Call of Duty-ish. Like, it just...
It did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Old man in the chat says, the NZXT Z790 Intel ATX motherboard is $119 on Best Buy. That's actually not bad for a Z790 board. It was a $300 board. Yeah. That's not... Like I said, you're going to see prices go down on certain things, especially things like that. $119 for a Z790 board is not bad at all.
$119 for a motherboard, period, is
yeah. Especially with like tariffs and everything like that. Yeah. Right. So, Ryan, you have a bunch of network attached storage. So do I. So when you buy network attached storage, you're just like, you have the vendor that you like. A lot of people use WD Red Drive. Some people use, what is it, the Seagate? What are those called?
Is it the FireCuda or just their NAS drives? I forget what
they're called. Yeah, Seagate has NAS drives. Everybody has NAS drives. Mm-hmm. And Synology has NAS drives. But it appears as if Synology is making it so if you buy a new Synology NAS, the new models in 2025, that you won't be able to use any other hard drives except for Synology hard drives.
So Synology drives or certified drives.
Yes.
From other vendors. Yes.
Yes.
So I don't know if this is, you know, they talk about reliability and compatibility and unlocking features. And what some of it is that you may be able to still use other drives, but you won't have all of the features of the operating system and the NAS itself available to you without those drives.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know if some of this plays into like kickback to what I did for a lot of my drives, which is called shucking, right? I take an external hard drive that Western Digital has, and they essentially have NAS drives in them, and they're cheaper than just buying the NAS drive. So you buy the external hard drive, crack it out of its case, and throw it in your NAS, and you've got a cheaper NAS drive with the same specs. So maybe it's a way for them to do something like that, you know, help out their drive partners so that you've got to buy those certified NAS drives as opposed to the ones that would be shucked. I don't know. I don't like restricting, like arbitrary restricting stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is like say you have an older NAS and you're just like, yeah, I'm just gonna throw my new drives in this new NAS I get. And then they won't either.
You mean your old drives into it?
What?
You say you want to throw your old drives into the new NAS?
Yeah. Or something.
Yeah, which I think they are allowing as well. Like if you have drives in a current Synology that may not be on that list, as long as they belong to an existing Synology array or setup, you can transfer them and not lose that functionality.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I believe that's true. So.
Yeah. With anything, that doesn't matter if it's hard drives or I don't like restriction on it at all. I'm just not a fan of the restriction, but I get why. Like I said, if certain drives have certain features that other ones don't, and that feature is part of the Synology operating system and how it works, I get it. But
yeah, not a huge fan of this, but you see it more and more. Like,
yeah,
just. But it doesn't, you know, old man says he shucked two 18 terabyte Western Digital drives a few years ago. Mine were all 8 terabyte that I did with mine. And it's, you know, my capacity, I'm just over half capacity on my NAS, which was, I think it's got like 42 terabytes of usable space, I think. So I still got plenty of space on there. But every now and then I get the itch. I'm like, maybe I should update these 8 terabyte drives to like, you know, 20 terabyte drives, and then I'll have so much space. But
yeah.
There's a decent cost to it. And
yeah, NAS drives are not cheap. But I always tell the story is that I was like, years ago, I set up my NAS. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get, like, back when I built my first NAS, like 2 terabyte, 4 terabyte were like the popular drives at the time. So I'm like, right. I'm going to buy sixes. And like 6 terabyte drives never go on sale, ever. Nope. 8 terabyte, 10 terabyte, 4 terabyte always go on sale. Like Amazon Prime Day, everything goes on sale. 6 terabyte drives literally have never gone on sale for a decade. They never go on sale. It's one of the things that I hate. Because I eventually do need to start replacing, because that, you know, but they just never, the 6s never went on sale.
Yep.
I think I'm going to upgrade that NAS and just like maybe go with 10s.
Just go higher than that. For sure.
Expensive.
Yeah, but it's not that crazy.
Yeah. how, like, what would you, if you're building a new NAS now, what size drives would you get?
I would probably actually be looking to go to all flash. Okay. Which would be much smaller drives, and using that as my main array, and then you know, probably like a secondary NAS, either swapping out the 8 terabytes that I have with, like, I don't know, 18s or 20s, probably.
How much?
Just because, like, I want.
How much is an 18 terabyte drive right now?
I don't know.
Yeah, look it up. Like, what, floor 400?
Let's see.
500.
You want a NAS drive?
Yeah, Synology doesn't even make a 20. Don't. Like, they only make a 16.
Let's see here. A WD Red Pro 18 terabyte is $374.
Oh, that's not bad.
Well, okay. But yeah, but you can get a 18 terabyte Seagate Iron Wolf Pro for $283. So $100 less.
Now look up a price of a 6 terabyte WD Red Pro.
Six terabyte. It's no featured offers available. I can't even get you one. $189.
Yeah. So how is it that a 6 terabyte is $189, but what did you look up? An 18?
18. Oh, yep. Is just $100 more.
Yeah.
Seagate. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah. I gotta upgrade. We're gonna be upgrading here soon. Now that you told me the prices of the hot, because I never look. I'm like, well, if a 6 terabyte is this, it's probably like $400 or $500 for, right, an 18 terabyte. No. But nope. I guess this is because 6 is just not the good one to get. But yeah, kind of interesting. Like I said, not a fan of restrictions or anything like that. Now, I don't think here in the United States, like, e-readers are like a thing. Like, have you ever wanted to buy like an e-reader, like an e-ink tablet e-reader type thing,
like a what were they called, the Kindle, or like a
yeah, I guess like a Kindle or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, I know, I only know them because, like, my mother-in-law had one or something, you know, but I don't know. I have no use for one. I don't think.
Yeah, I just don't think they're, like, necessarily as big here in the United States compared to other places. But the first foldable e-reader was launched. This is the Readmu Moon Ink 5. And it's quite small. Like, this picture makes it look a little big. Like, it's very small. It's not much larger than a cell phone. It's because this is an 8-inch foldable color e-reader. I'm still not sold on foldable. Would you ever do a foldable device?
No.
No?
No, like, I, one of the guys, so,
like, you wouldn't get a foldable phone.
He has like the foldable Pixel, and I just can't get over, like, the distortion in the screen.
Yeah,
the wave. No, it bugs me too much. I would rather have a foldable that's two separate screens than a foldable screen.
I think I agree with that.
Now, the Lenovo that we saw at CES that, like, rolled out, it looked pretty good.
Like I said, the Lenovo OLED foldable looked insanely good as well. I just think with devices like this, like, you are, like, with a laptop, you're like, you're probably half of the opens compared to a phone. At least your phone, you're doing at least double.
Oh yeah.
Open and closing. Yep. But it's pretty cool that, you know, this, like I said, for the US, I don't think e-readers are really much of a thing. Everybody's, if you want something small, you're reading it on your phone. If you want something a little bit bigger, you have an iPad, tablet, something like that. And then, of course, you can read all of these things you would read on an e-reader on your PC or on your laptop too. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. Apple's supposed to have a foldable iPhone coming. That's the rumor.
Oh, interesting.
So that'll be kind of interesting if that actually comes out. Yeah. I still don't know if I'd get it, though. You'd have to see, but...
Yeah, unless they've, like, come up with some amazing breakthrough for those, like, foldable screens. Yeah, I'm good.
I would really have to see it and have to, like... You have to play with it, right?
Yeah.
Before you get it. So yeah. So one of the things, like, I'm sure you've had this happen. I've had actually had this happen a lot recently, which we'll talk about. But you're in Windows, you know, you're in Windows, you're doing something, and like a app or program like locks up, right? And then you have to hit Control Delete and then end the task, right?
Yep.
It's like, it's not that hard of a thing to do, but now Windows has a new end task feature for the taskbar. So all you have, it's really easy to enable within Windows. You just go to your system settings and then go to for developers. And then you just, this end task right here, you just turn it on. And I turned it on my system, and like, yeah, you can just right click on any app that's in the taskbar, and then you get an option to end the task. So it looks like this, you know,
that's cool.
So you can just end the task, just making it so much easier. In this article, we tell you how to enable it if you want to do it. But it's, yeah, it just makes things so much easier to end the task.
You should make a video of this.
Yeah, YouTube. I guess I could. Yeah,
this is like super easy, but very popular probably right now.
Yeah, like I said, it was just unveiled. It was the
last couple of days.
Yeah, so... So yeah, like I said, really easy to do. And if, like I said, you just turn it on, and now, like I said, it just makes it, yeah, super easy. Because like I said, so many times you're like Control Delete, and then you're just waiting, and then you got to find the and that's the biggest problem, is that you have to find the process in the and if yep. you're somebody who has processes running, not like, so you're viewing all of the processes, not just the apps, then you have to find it within the process tree. You're not just looking at apps either. So that can be annoying. So yeah, just makes it a lot easier to go ahead and do that. So pretty cool. Like I said, in the article, we have how to do it if you want to do it, and yeah, just make things so much easier. And we'll get to my, I've been having really bad issues with Windows lately, which I'll tell you about when we get to the end of the episode. PlayStation 6 Portable. So we've been hearing rumors about this portable coming from Sony. PlayStation 6 Portable could have full PS5 library support, which I was thinking about this because I was like, well, PS5 is like big.
It's not huge.
Like it's small. Mm-hmm. But you have to realize is that the PS5, they're going for 4K 60, right? Yeah. That hardware set. And now, you know, you're years later, and you know, we've seen devices that are, this is just whatever this is, this PlayStation a bit. You see devices that are essentially this size that can do 1080p over 60 FPS. We saw them at CES. They're, you know, especially on the AMD side when it comes to their SoCs, can do that. So I think that's totally possible to have PS5 library support for portable.
It's pretty wild.
What do you
like? Think? That's a lot of. Yeah, I mean, obviously, probably not running at 4K 60. Obviously,
yeah. No, the screen you're going to run at max would be like 1080p 120.
Right, right. So that'd be cool. That's a lot of power to pack into a handheld. But yeah, it's cool. And they've had good luck with their portables in the past. You know, PSP. What was the other one? Was it the Vita?
Yeah, the Vita. I think that's what is this? This is an actual real photo. I don't know. The
PS Vita was a handheld.
Yeah. It says PlayStation 6 Portable will be powered by 15 watt SoC. So, and yeah, probably AMD. This could be a huge win for AMD too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of people, like a lot of the console gamers, they don't want to get like the ROG Ally. They don't want to mess with Windows so much, but like the PlayStation fans, they want that portable that will play all their PlayStation games. They could take it with them. Yep. What would you think pricing would be? 500?
That seems high, but maybe not. Yeah. Yeah.
I can like see the same as a console, right?
Mm-hmm.
Essentially.
Yeah. If you've got that whole access to that whole library on the go, you've got to keep it pretty close to price. Otherwise, yeah, you'll kill any remaining PS5 purchases.
Yeah.
Especially if this thing can like dock and continue to output. If you could still, even if it just outputs a 1080, right?
Well, I mean, you could have it like, so if you dock it, then you could,
like, EGPU,
you would that 15 watt SoC, you could push a lot higher because you don't have to worry about battery life if it's docked. You could push it. Yeah.
Have some cooling built into the dock or something.
There could be a lot of different things. It'd be really interesting to see what happens with this, with this PlayStation Portable, because I think the market is ready for it. I think the market is very much ready for it because everybody's making a portable now. We saw this stuff with Xbox. That's essentially going to be maybe a reskinned ROG Ally. So PlayStation has got to jump on board too. So I'm excited. I'm excited for more people playing games and all of that. And I love to see like all of this hardware just in this like small little package. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'll be exciting to see what happens with that. Now imagine you made this, you're a game developer or whatever, and you make this map that's like so hard for anybody to beat. And then finally, 12 years later, somebody beats it. So that's what just happened. So there was this map in Doom 2, a challenge map, was finally beaten. So this is Oku Plok map, which I never had heard of before this story. You have to kill 23,211 demons.
It took 6 hours.
Yeah, 6 hours to beat it. And this was done by... Who was this done by? We have the video here. So, let me bring this up. This is done by...
Coincident?
So let's see if we can
get... Good lord, 6 hours.
Like, look at all... Yeah, so shout out to Coincident for doing, like, playing this for 6 hours. And, look at all these dead guys. I feel like it's just dead guys everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
So it looks so hard, everybody's dead.
Yeah, because he killed them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's pretty... I, like, scrolled through the video earlier today. It's pretty crazy the amount of mobs that come at you and kind of... But he like knew what he was doing when he was like, he had played this for a while. You know what I mean?
Yep. They're just everywhere.
Yeah, they're literally everywhere. So that's kind of interesting. And we're seeing a lot of these things getting beat lately, like certain speed runs and things like that.
You wonder if this is stuff that you could like feed through an AI to like let it run the stuff and find the optimal like play.
That is quite interesting.
Play type, actually. You know what I mean? Like it can figure out the most efficient way or the only way to safely do it. That'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, it would be quite interesting to see if,
especially if it can do it in a way that doesn't take 6 hours. Like if it can, I don't know how it would work, right?
But yeah, I mean, I think
like if it could just have access to the whole like 6 hour or time frame or whatever achievement it is, if it can just look at it all at once and like just keep solving over and over and over as opposed to linearly.
Yeah,
I don't know,
that'd be interesting, but pretty cool. Like I said, shout out to Coincident on YouTube. Like I said, we have the video in the article if you want to scroll through it or watch it. I couldn't imagine you want to watch all 6 hours, but it is pretty crazy to see something like that get beaten. I played some different maps. I remember like we were playing StarCraft a couple of weeks ago. Like there are some StarCraft maps that are like insanely hard to beat and things like that. So
yeah,
pretty cool. So definitely go ahead and check that out as well. And that brings us to what we have coming up next week. So I'm taking a look at a case that we saw at CES, the Thermaltake TR100. I have the white one right here. This is a small mini ITX system, but you can still do long graphics cards. I'll be installing an AIO that they sent over as well in here. I didn't get the screen though, but beyond that, like I said, it's going to look quite nice and have just a nice little system.
I'm interested to see this review.
Yeah, so like I said, I think it's going to work out quite well for a nice little system. So I'll be taking a look at that. And I'm also taking a look at a keyboard that's actually, as I almost unplugged it right here. So I'll be taking a look at the Melgeek Made 68. This is their Hall Effect keyboard. Really, really nice. And this is like a pre-built. Just a super, super nice looking keyboard. Feels really good. Like I said, I've been using it for a little over a week now. And I really, really like it. So I'll have that for you guys as well. And maybe some other stuff. It just depends on what all I get done. Now, before we get to the question of the week, because this is kind of pertaining to the question of the week, I've been having insane issues with my computer. Like, if I walk away for a couple hours and come back, my computer's frozen. And just before we started the podcast, I'm just doing work. Just, you know, doing stuff. I have a Spotify playing and then Spotify stops. So like something's going on. And then like I can still move my mouse, but like my apps, they just like don't work. They're kind of frozen. I hit control delete to bring up the taskbar to see what's going on. But it brings it up, but there's not like the screen is just white. Just
empty.
You know, then I have like I can go start shutdown to shut down, but it just stays there. So I have to I have to hold in the power button, force shut down, and then, and this has been pretty constant for the past, I don't know, week and a half. I did just update my graphics driver. There were a lot of issues with previous NVIDIA graphics driver, so maybe that's it. I have the latest Windows update. I really hope that that fixes it and it's not something else. I don't know what else it would be. But I hope it's not something
memory else. Leak or anything.
Yeah, or something. Like I would hope it's not something else. I would hope it's maybe graphics driver. I hadn't updated my graphics driver. But it's quite annoying when you're like earlier today I was just like in the middle of work and then just freeze and then I have to, you know, force shut down and then restart and do all that kind of stuff. But that does bring us to our question of the week is that how often do you update Windows or how often do you update your drivers?
So for me, like Windows, I update pretty often. Like if I'm shut, and because I shut my PC down at night, every night usually.
Yes.
It depends. If I'm like in a hurry or something, I'll just do shutdown. Even if it's like shut, you know, install, update and shutdown or update and restart, I'll just hit shutdown. But usually I'm pretty good about Windows updates. Graphics drivers, man, if I'm not having an issue, who knows how far behind they are.
Well, that was the thing. I hadn't updated my, I maybe updated my graphics because I was having issues like a month ago. And I think that's the last time I updated my graphics driver when we were having the issue with Marvel Rivals. So that's the last time I really updated my graphics driver. So hopefully, maybe that's my issue. I just updated because my computer froze right before we started the podcast. So I updated my graphics driver. Everything's good currently as I just like freeze in place and then nothing works.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of what I've been dealing with on this system. I would hate to have to update my system or like...
restart
from scratch. I mean, I wouldn't mind. Like, it could be a Windows issue too, right? It's not the biggest of deal to reinstall Windows, like clean slate, because now with like all the apps and everything, like everything's saved, like all your settings are like kind of in the cloud. You know, you log into Adobe, everything's
a lot of stuff
there. Like most things are there. It's never like a massive deal anymore. It used to be because you had to like remember all your settings and take
your configs and
take like a picture with your phone of like your configs and like you don't have to do that as much anymore when you do a full Windows reinstall. So if I still have issues, I'll probably end up doing that just to see if that's my issue. That's always a good thing to do, like full reinstall of Windows, also full uninstall and reinstall of your browser. Like browsers can get real messed up. I've had that with Chrome before, and then I just did a full-on like complete uninstall, complete reinstall of Chrome, and it fixed a lot of my issues too. Also, just as we're talking about this, if you are having issues with Chrome, Chrome's like crushing your computer or something, make sure you turn off hardware acceleration.
Yeah, I turned it back on because I had turned it off at some point, but I use Canva, and there were certain things I would do in Canva. I was like, why is this running like crap?
Yeah, I've had that issue before.
And then I was like, oh, let me turn this back on. And then, yeah, like... Fixed my issue.
It fixed it. Yeah, no problem. So those are some things you can do. But yeah, and I also have another gripe, and I don't understand it, and I think it's through multiple sports. I don't understand why the NHL can't figure out streaming. Like, so for the season, it's like ESPN Plus, right?
Okay.
Like for the regular season, ESPN Plus, but there were some games. They still messed it up because there were worlds. Like if a game is a national game on NHL Network, you can't watch it on ESPN Plus, which is stupid. So now the playoffs come along, and I'm like, okay, well, I have ESPN Plus. I should be able to watch playoff game.
Of course.
I go to watch playoff game last night, and I click on it within the ESPN Plus, and it's like, enter your provider info, like Comcast, whatever. And I'm like, well, I just have internet. Like, I don't have cable. Yeah. Because the games are on normal ESPN, I can't watch them. I can't stream them on ESPN Plus. Doesn't make any sense. It's like, I want to pay you money. Like, I'll pay more money for like a playoff package, right? A playoff streaming package. Like, I'll pay money, whatever that is, I'll pay it because I want to watch hockey. You know, and I couldn't do that. I couldn't watch it. Because it's, you know, and the thing is, I'm streaming only. I don't have cable, and I'm also not in a hockey market. I'm not in a market either. So it's not like I'm blacked out or something like that, right? Like, I'm not in the market. So I should be able to stream only. And this is some, from what I was reading on Reddit too, people are like, yeah, this is across like all sports. Like the NBA is the same way. The MLB is the same way. It's like, why can't you do just streaming only? Like, give me a price for what streaming only is, and I'll probably pay it because I just want an easy way to watch hockey.
That reminds me, I need to cancel my my YouTube TV account. Like, I only got it for football season. Well, football's been over since February, so
yeah. Well, that's the thing.
I'm paying for something I'm not using.
So you technically can do like YouTube TV or Fubo TV or any of those to get the ESPN channel so you can watch it.
Yep.
But then that's like, I don't want to pay $84.99 or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's $82.99, I think.
Yeah. So it's I just don't understand why the leagues can't do a streaming only deal, right? Give full access to every game for a price. Same thing with the playoffs, full access to every game so I can watch it. So like, I would prefer not to go to some shady streaming website to stream the game. I would prefer to give you money, but you don't, the way you have this set up, I can't give you money to watch the game, which is crazy. Unless I have a real cable package, which like more and more people don't have cable. It's just there's no point.
I can pause for up to 24 weeks, and they'll keep all my recordings.
You can record on YouTube too. I've never used YouTube
TV. Yeah, so I can pause to like the end of August, and then pick it right back up, and it'll like do it automatically. So maybe I do that, and I can resume anytime.
You should do that.
So I'm gonna hit pause because my billing date is in like 2 days.
You have to watch with that too, because
pause.
So talking about something really quick with our website, if you guys missed last week's podcast, we moved from WP Engine to a dedicated server, get better speeds, whatever. So I went to cancel WP Engine like this past week. And apparently, like, again, nobody reads like your terms of service. 30 days to put in the cancel request. So I'm stuck paying for another month of WP Engine. Which again, so maybe that's in your TOS. They're not going to let you cancel before your pause before your date or whatever. But yeah, guys, that is it for the podcast this week. Of course, we're going to be doing some gaming over on Twitch. What are we playing this week, Ryan?
I mean, I would love to play Rivals, but I know we'll probably just play Apex. We did play a different mode last week.
That was really fun.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that that's still available because we had a blast last week.
Yeah, we were doing well.
We had like, what, 3 or 4 wins, I think?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So hopefully that mode's still there. We'll be playing some Apex over on Twitch. Ryan runs that stream, twitch.tv/thinkcomputers. Definitely head on over there if you want to keep on hanging out with us or if you want to watch us be pretty mediocre at gaming. That's where we're going to be, twitch.tv/thinkcomputers. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. And, of course, everybody that listens later on audio or on video. And we will see everybody next week.